Jon Stewart is back at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition wherever you get your podcasts.
Now you can feel like you're in the audience at the Ed Sullivan Theater with official Late Show with Stephen Colbert merchandise at ParamountShop.com. Shop t-shirts, mugs, accessories, and more. And Late Show Pod Show listeners can take 20% off with code TLS20. That's 20% off at checkout on all Late Show products with code TLS20 at ParamountShop.com. It's the Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert.
Tonight, it is my honor to sit down with a man from Scranton who made good. Please welcome the next president of the United States, Joseph R. Biden. Sir, thanks so much for sitting down with me today.
Well, thanks. I always enjoy being with you. Thank you. And thank you for making a trip down to Wilmington, Delaware.
It's always nice talking to you, too. I've had the opportunity and I've enjoyed talking to you on camera and off several times over the last 10 years now. First time I interviewed you. But now you have a new job. You are about to be the most powerful person in the world. And my job to talk about what's going on in the world. What is President Biden going to put into the world?
Hopefully, we're going to. When I ran, I said, Stephen, really early on, that the next president is going to inherit two things: a nation divided and a world in disarray. And in the world at large, we got to say America's back. America's back. We keep our commitments to our allies. We know the difference between our adversaries and our friends. So I've been already. I've spoken to. I've calls from 25, 26 world leaders, America's back, number one. Number two, I think the nation, and I don't think I'm kidding myself, I got criticized from the beginning for saying this, I think the nation is looking for us to be united, much more united. We don't have to have this politics has become so sort of dirty and vicious and personal and mean, and clenched fist instead of an open hand. And I think people are looking for us to come together.
When we spoke in May, I asked you if you were going to beat this guy, I believe is how I put it. And you said, yes, I am. And it's beginning to look pretty good for you. The odds are pretty good that you're going to beat him at this point. Do you take it personally at all, the Republicans who haven't acknowledged your win?
No, look, they're in a tough spot. I know everybody says, well, they should just step up. How can I say this? A number of them sent messages to me 4 weeks ago. Give me time, Joe. Give me some time. It's fine by me. It's fine by me. We won. We won Georgia three times. No, but all kidding aside, look, it's a tough spot.
But you understand the spot they're in?
I do.
But because you understand it, you also have to understand how futile the spot is for them to resist the reality of the electoral college. Lindsey Graham, a friend of yours, he has said things about you nicer than anything has any had been said about me. I wish somebody would say the things about me that Lindsey Graham said about you. Do you think you guys can patch it up and work together?
Lindsey's been a personal disappointment because I was a personal friend of his. I think I can work with the Republican leadership in the House and the Senate. I think we can get things done. And I think once this president is no longer in office, mm-hmm. I think you're going to see his impact on the body politic fade. And a lot of these Republicans are going to feel they have much more room to run and cooperate.
The first time you and I ever spoke together was on the old show, and it was in 2010. And I asked you a question in character, but it left a real impression on me what your answer was.
The administration has got some criticism from me and my conservative friends that you have not given enough credit to President Bush. Would you like to take this opportunity right now? Look over
Mr.
there and
President,
say, Thank you.
Mr. President, thank you. You've honored these guys, you've honored these women, you've honored these troops, and I've known you your entire 8 years as president. I've never known a time when you didn't care about what happened. We disagreed on policy, but you deserve a lot of credit, Mr. President.
Mr. President, I never disagreed with your policy.
Well, the thing I liked about that is that regardless of the difference of policy, and this is part of your bipartisan spirit, you were willing to recognize a core duty of the president that you believe the President Bush had taken and executed responsibly. And I admired that, your willingness to do that without hesitation. Is there anything about your predecessor, the current president, that you could thank him for sincerely?
Well, the answer is there are some things. I think what he's done, getting the vaccine moving, has been positive, but by and large, he has been a president who's decided that the way he succeeds is by dividing us.
Well, I want to talk about the present crisis, the COVID-19 crisis. You've said in your first 100 days, you want to see 100 million Americans inoculated.
100 million inoculations. That's 50 million Americans.
Okay, 50 million Americans, 100 million inoculations in the first 100 days. I follow this stuff as closely as I can.
No.
I don't actually know how that's going to be achieved. I don't know the process. I'm willing to wait my turn, but hand to God, I don't know what the plan is.
Well,
do you know what the plan is?
I know the plan I want. I know the plan I'm learning about. It's a big difference. My argument from the beginning has been here. It's one thing to get the vaccine delivered to X number of spots around the country. It's a very different thing to get the vaccine out of that tube into a syringe into somebody's arm. The vaccination, that is a monumental task, and it's probably the single most significant effort that take place in the United States to distribute something around the world, around the country. And so it's going to take a lot more than we have now. That's why I'm praying that the House passes at least, I mean, the House and Senate, before they recess now, pass that $900 billion proposal. Mm-hmm. We're going to need more. We're going to need more vaccine. We're going to need more money. We're going to need more to be able to get this distributed. But it's underway, and I believe we can get I think we can get 100 million vaccinations taking place. That's, and if some of the vaccinations, you know, require two different shots. Two different times.
I know.
And one of the things I'm pleading with the president to do now is order more of it. We stepped off the world stage. We walked away from the World Health Organization. We decided we weren't going to cooperate with any other nations in this and participate. That's a big mistake. Walls can't stop the virus.
I know you've heard from world leaders. I understand that Vladimir Putin sent you a telegram, which I didn't know you could still do. But what did it say? Can you share that with us?
The answer is yes. It basically said, congratulations, acknowledging I won. But there wasn't much beyond that.
What happens to our relationship with Russia? There has been essentially patty cake with Russia for the last 4 years, regardless of the fact that we knew that they attacked our election. And we've just found out for the last 8 months at least, they've been setting up base camp in both economic, financial, and national security organizations in the United States. How do you make sure they don't do this again? What is the message? How do you send that message of a brushback pitch
to the Russians? I've sent the message. They'll be held accountable. They'll be held accountable.
Can you give us a appetizer of what that accountability might be?
Individuals as well as entities will be find they have. There's financial repercussions for what they did, ability to access a lot. And we have to invest a lot more money in cyber. We have to invest a lot more money in dealing with the ability to respond as well as the ability to be more protect both private and public entities. And we haven't made that commitment. We will under my administration.
Well, sir, as nice as it is to talk to you, I'm sure you're aware you're just the opening act.
I do know that.
And when we return, we will get to the headliner, Dr. Jill Biden.
I fully Stick around. Appreciate that.
Enjoying this episode of the Late Show Pod Show? Then head to cohst.app/lateshow or visit the link in the description to fill out our quick 2-minute survey all about getting to know you.
Welcome back, everybody. Joining us now is the future First Lady of the United States, Dr. Jill Biden. Dr. Biden, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you, too.
Thank you.
You are historic in that you will be the first lady with a full-time paying job. What is that, and why is that important to you?
Well, you know, it's hard for me to think of it in historic terms, I guess, because I taught all 8 years while I was second lady. But I'm really looking forward to being first lady and doing the things that I did as second lady, carrying on with military families and education and free community college, cancer that, you know, Joe and I have both worked on. Mm-hmm. And then and I'm going to teach as well.
Now, you once said in your own memoir, the role I have always felt most at home in is Dr. Biden. Now, some people have recently taken upon themselves to question that title of yours. Do you have any reaction to those people?
Yeah, that was such a surprise.
It caught me by surprise as well. I did not see that one coming.
No, nor did I. And, you know, it was really the tone of it that I think that, you know, he called me kiddo. And one of the things I'm most proud of is my doctorate. I mean, I worked so hard for it. And my, you know, Joe came when I defended my thesis. And but, you know,
I got to hand her her doctorate on the stage, University of Delaware. But she had 2 master's degrees. She kept going to school all the time while teaching at night. And then what happens is I said, Jill, why don't you get a doctorate and make us some real money? She gets the doctorate and gets a $2,000 raise.
And but look at all the people who came out in support of me. I mean, I am so grateful. And I was, you know, I was just overwhelmed by how gracious people were toward
me. Do you think
me.
It might be a little bit of a compliment that people were trying to think of something to criticize you about, and they were like, what do we got? I got it.
Okay, I'll take it that
now,
way.
Now, what about you? As a husband who loves this person, did you ever, you know, want to, like, get out a length of pool chain and go full corn pop on these people?
The answer is, it's
no.
close.
No, the answer is no.
No, but there's some of these, anyway.
Mm-hmm. It was just the tone of it.
I've been suppressing my Irishness for a long time.
It's always a smart thing to do. Now, the inaugural, obviously, is, I don't know how many days away. I bet one of your staff knows. How many days away is it? What?
34.
Oh. Send that girl a box of steaks. She got it right. So 34 days from now, Mr. President-elect, you first ran for this job 32 years ago. I got to think you've been imagining what that day was going to be like for a long time. What's it going to be now in reality? How does that match your original image?
Well, the truth is, I hadn't thought about it in a long time, for real, because we didn't plan on, after Bo died, I decided I was a professor up at the University of Pennsylvania, had an institute at the University of Delaware, and it wasn't until those folks came out of the fields down in Charlottesville that I realized something had to happen. And what happened was, quickly, our granddaughters asked for a meeting. They came to see us, and grandson, and said, you got to run, Pop. And that's when we decided to run. But it's been more a sense of, how can I say it? A sense of obligation than wanting to live in the White House. It's about changing. This is not who we've been. The country we've been the last 4 years is not who we are. And we have to get back to who we are. We are a democracy. We are a democracy that has shown respect and decency and been a beacon to the rest of the world. And we were losing that.
Well, what about the event itself? What's going to happen at the inaugural? Have those plans been solidified yet? I know that you'll be holding the Bible.
I'll be holding the Bible.
And have you been working out?
I was actually looking for it today.
Have you been working out? Because this is the size of your family Bible.
1893.
1893. Yeah. Why is your Bible bigger than mine? Do you have more Jesus than I do?
No, I don't think so. But it's just been a family heirloom on the Biden side of the family.
And, uh-huh.
And every important date is in there. When my son, for example, every time I've been sworn in for anything, the date is I've been on that, and and it's inscribed on the Bible. Our sons, when he was sworn in as Attorney General, all the important dates in our family going way back, and it's just been a family heirloom.
Yeah.
Do you There's been speculation by some about whether your predecessor will attend, as is traditional, your inaugural. Does it matter to you whether he does?
In a personal sense, no, but in a sense relating to
history,
in terms of mm-hmm. we've been the beacon of democracy for the last 200 years, and the peaceful transfer of power, and one the power being handed from one person to another, one party to another, is who we are. And that's the part I worry about, is how that reflects around the world. And so, but that's the only standpoint from which I don't take it personally, but I do think it affects the view of the rest of the world as to who we are.
So for the good of the country, it would be a better thing to have happen.
I think so.
It seems like as long as the both of you have both been in Washington and weathered the slings and arrows of that town, mm-hmm. you're about to step into something completely different right now. And as you've known, people who you thought that you could rely on sometimes turn on you. What are you going to do, and how will you sustain each other for the attacks that you know are coming your way? I mean, case in point, I know you want to be as bipartisan and reach across the aisle, but as much as you don't want it to happen, you know that the people who want to make hay in Washington are going to try to use your adult son as a cudgel against you. How do you feel about that, and what do you have to say to those people?
Well, look, we have great confidence in our son. I am not concerned about any accusations been made against him. It's used to get to me. I think it's kind of foul play, but look, it is what it is. And he's a grown man. He is the smartest man I know. I mean, in pure intellectual capacity. And as long as he's good, we're good.
As a father, I understand that, and I admire that. But I mean, in terms of your job as president, can you reach across to the aisle to people who will be using this as an attack on you when it is such a personal attack because it's about family?
But if it benefits the country, yes, I really mean it, because we know who we are.
You're a better man than I.
Don't get me wrong. It doesn't mean I'm not angry. It doesn't mean I wasn't angry, and it doesn't mean if I were back in the days in high school, I wouldn't say, come here, you know, and go around.
But you have to take the high road.
Because, look, there's so much at stake. And the American people, I think they can smell the phoniness, smell what's true and what's not true. And I just, but what it does do, a couple of people who have, it's just been a disappointment. I feel badly for them. I'm not being facetious.
People we thought were our friends.
I feel badly, but what's happened? What went wrong? What's going on here? And look at the people who stepped up. Look at all the Republicans who stepped up in this campaign. Former office holders, you know, John McCain's wife. People who went out there who were whole public office were major Republican figures. The former chairman of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's a lot more good than there, but my job, I'm not kidding, Stephen, I'm going to be judged by history, whether or not I can make things better for the American people. And I will deal with anyone if what we're working on is improving the well-being of the American people. That's not phony, it's real. I swallow hard, and I'll do it.
We have to take another quick break, but stick around, everybody. We'll be right back with President-elect Joe Biden and Dr. Jill Biden.
I'm Rachel Martin. After hosting Morning Edition for years, I know that the news can wear you down. So we made a new podcast called Wild Card, where a special deck of cards and a whole bunch of fascinating guests help us sort out what makes life meaningful. It's part game show, part existential deep dive, and it is seriously fun. Join me on Wild Card, wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
Hey, everybody, we're back with President-elect Joseph R. Biden and future First Lady Dr. Jill Biden. You will be the second Catholic president. And I don't know about you, and maybe not growing up in a Presbyterian household, but in Catholic household, there was an icon of JFK. on my wall as a child, and RFK. I'm surprised more hasn't been made of the second Catholic president. It's significant, certainly, to me. JFK had to allay everyone's fears that there wasn't some emergency phone to the Pope to tell him what to do. But it's 60 years on. I mean, is it emails now? How is the Pope going to tell you how to govern?
Well, the Pope called me.
He called you?
Personally called me.
Really?
To congratulate me. And matter of fact, I just had a nice phone call with His Eminence, the new cardinal in Washington, who said he just got back from Rome, and the Pope signed a book for me he wants me to have. The Pope's been incredibly generous to our family.
Yes.
When he came to visit, we were the house Catholics, so we were the ones showing the Pope around. And Bo had just died just a couple weeks earlier. Mm-hmm. And he asked to meet with the family in the hangar at the airport as he was leaving in Philly. And he came in. We had 16 family members there. And he didn't just speak about Bo. He spoke in detail about Bo, about who he was and about family values and about forgiveness and about decency. I mean, he is I am a great admirer of His Holiness. I really am.
I know you've been very open about the importance of faith in your life. And Dr. Biden, I know you have a prayer partner that you picked up on the campaign. Who is that? And I've never had a prayer partner. What's a prayer partner?
I could be your prayer partner.
I'm in.
It was a woman I met. It was, I had a real struggle with my faith after Bo died because I just didn't believe he was going to die. And we were in South Carolina at a church, and a woman came up to me.
An African-American church.
Yeah. And she put her hand on me and she said, "Jill, I want to be your prayer partner." And I thought, prayer partner? I never heard of that. But I have to tell you, we call one another. She texts me a couple times a week. She actually texted me this morning. And we've continued to pray for, this country and people struggling. I mean, look how many people, Americans, are struggling through this pandemic. It's meant a great deal to me. So I figured so many people prayed for me and Joe when Bo was so ill, and now I need to pray. We need to pray for other people.
Both of you have been so open, and I say generous because not everyone feels comfortable sharing their grief with the public. Not demonstrably, but as an example of the necessity of grief to heal yourself. Our country has an unaddressed grief of the 300,000 people who have died, partly because our present leadership doesn't want to acknowledge the dimension of this tragedy. Mr. President-elect, what do you think the role of the president is in leading the country to face loss?
Well, look, you and I had a long discussion about this. You've had severe loss in your family, your dad, your brother. And it's profound. Think of all the people this Christmas are going to sit at a table with an empty chair across the table, a son, a daughter, a mom, a dad, somebody. And as you know, and I'm not being solicitous, you know that people want to know people who've been through it, and can I make it? Can I make it? Mm-hmm. And what you and I talked about is that I think empathy is a critically important thing. It doesn't make it easier to talk about because you've been through it. But when you've been through it and you talk to people, they go, okay, I know he or she understands because they've been through it.
But and how do we address that right now? Because there is this unaddressed grief, and it seems to me that it's not healthy for the nation to pretend like I'm worried that we're not addressing it, that we have to take a moment for the grief, and what is the role of the president to do that?
The role of the presidency is to say, grieve. There is a reason to grieve. You've had great loss. But there will come a time, remind yourself, just be reminded, the time will come when you think of your husband, wife, son, daughter, mom, or dad, and you're going to get a smile to your lips before you get a tear to your eye. That's when you know you're going to make it. In the meantime, we have to let people know there's a lot of people out there who also need help, outside help. Look at all the nurses and the doctors who've gone through hell of holding someone's hand that has no family member there while they died. and the impact it's had on them. That's why we have to invest a lot more money in mental health, a lot more money in all these opportunities for people to have someone to talk to. You have to talk through it. But people know if they look around and see this person made it, I can make it. We're going to get through this. It's going to be hell. And by the way, we're going to lose a lot more people. We're going to lose a lot more people.
But I think one of the reasons that Joe was elected was because of his sense of empathy. And I think people understand that he's had a lot of tragedy and loss in our family, and he understands what they're going through. And I hope the American people, when we get to the White House, know that we feel their pain. We know what it's like. And that Joe, and that there's hope, that things are going to get better for them, that there's, you know, we're going to have the vaccines, and, you know, Joe's going to work to unite the country. And so I hope they feel that there's real hope.
We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I will ask the Bidens about their Christmas traditions.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover
inside the house there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God. This is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, early and ad-free on the 48 Hours Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts.
Hey, everybody, we're back here with the Bidens. Christmas is just around the corner. Mm-hmm. I have to ask, in a normal Christmas year, what are the Biden family Christmas traditions? Because in my family, the number one tradition is probably to fight over the Christmas tree about which way the lights go, from the top to the bottom, and the bottom to the top. And it's obviously top to the bottom, and everything else is madness.
He's crazy about his Christmas tree because, you know, the Bidens have a tradition where they mix ivory snow with water. He uses my hand mixer.
Like the powdered turkey.
Yes.
Like a powder. But you can make it look like snow. My dad used to do it in the Biden tradition, my grandfather. Uh-huh. And I swear to God, it looks like snow is falling on the tree. And Santa Claus puts it on.
I bite it every year. And then the tinsel, I mean, he's like so particular.
One
like strand at a time.
You can't throw it on there.
You can't throw it on
No.
What are you talking about?
My dad, look.
Do you take it off again at the end of the year and iron it and put it back in the box?
No, we get rid of it, but you can't throw it on.
And it's hard to find.
That's the favorite thing for the little children to do. It's the little giant. We threw clumps at the Christmas tree.
We have elfdom.
No.
Your junior elf. So where you get, you got to put it on one strand at a time. And guess what?
There's a pecking order as to who gets to put it on.
By the way, I get to bed, not a joke, at 3 a.m. because Santa Claus puts the snow on.
Yes, Santa
Claus. Yes,
so that's
Santa
how you know he's been
even
there.
Even though they're grown children, and we have a tradition.
Yeah.
And you meet Santa down there for when he does it?
That's exactly right. And what happens is, the tradition in our family is based on youngest to oldest, including our grown children. You come down the stairs. Yep. I go down and see
Santa's
there.
There's no other way, obviously, youngest to oldest.
You got it. And that's how you do it. We used to have, we'd have 26 people for dinner every Christmas Eve for the last 20 years, our family. And then we'd have, this year it's going to be Jill and me and maybe our daughter and our son-in-law.
When you are First Lady, you get to make the calls on the Christmas decorations, so you can ban ivory snow on the trees for at least 4 years.
There you go.
I'm not doing all those trees. I just do Santa's tree, just the one. And
we'll
we have a 16-foot tree in our
hallway. We'll do one for you, Joe.
We have two trees.
We're going to have a lot of trees next year, sir.
That's right.
Oh, about next year.
Yeah.
Do you think this time next year, when you're both in the White House, we will have what you could call a normal Christmas? Will the country be back to normal?
I believe we'll be awfully close to that, if not there. I do believe that. I think we'd be able to have, because the combination, in the first 100 days, I'm going to ask everybody to wear a mask for 100 days, and where I can dictate that in federal property. I've been on with 45 governors asking them to think about it. Just 100 days. We're going to get those 100 million vaccinations out there, and we're going to get to the place we can open schools. And there's things we can do, and I think we can really, it's not going to be quick, but I think by next Christmas we'll be close to normal.
Yeah. Well, Mr. President-elect, Madam soon-to-be First Lady, thanks so much for taking time and sitting down with me. It's my honor, and I'll see you this time next year, I hope.
I hope so, too. Yeah. Hope so, too. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. Just one more thing. If you want to see more of me, come to The Late Show YouTube channel for more clips and exclusives.
Hey, everyone. It's David Duchovny. Do you ever feel like a failure? Trust me, I get it. Hell, I've spent my whole life almost feeling like a failure. It's appropriate, though, because on Fail Better, my new podcast with Lemonada Media, exploring the world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives, is the whole point. Each week, I'll chat with artists, athletes, actors, and experts about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, I hope we can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out on May 7th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Late Show Pod Show listeners can get 20% off on all Late Show with Stephen Colbert merchandise on ParamountShop.com. That's 20% off at checkout on all Late Show shirts, mugs, accessories, and more with code TLS20 at ParamountShop.com.